Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay from the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So good evening to all our listeners, and good evening, Misty.
Good evening, Bonnie. How are you?
Colder than you. You know, we talk about this each week, that you're cold, you're warm. We're freezing here in the north, you know, on the East Coast. But you're doing good in Florida there.
Yeah, I'm warm and cozy.
Maybe I'll relocate there at your house for the next winter.
Come on. I've got extra room. Come on down.
That sounds good. But anyway, we're really excited tonight because we have two very special guests on our show. And our first guest is someone who's getting a lot of national prominence right now, Kiri Blakely, who wrote her book, Can't Think Straight, A Memoir of Mixed Up Love. And our other guest is Jonathan Alpert, who's a psychotherapist who's based in New York City and also works with people in the neighboring states, who also works a lot with, you know, women and men in the situation of being in a straight gay marriage. So we would like to welcome both of you tonight, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. You know, I thought that we would talk with Kiri first and talk a little bit about your story. And I first found out about you through Forbes magazine because they had contacted me for a comment about your book.
Right.
And, you know, that's why I was, you know, so happy to see how well it's doing. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your story, Kiri.
Well, it's, you know, I was with my fiance for 10 years. We hadn't actually made it legal and gotten married, but we lived together. We were engaged. And we decided that we were going to, you know, make it legal, take that next step, get married. He was always actually somebody who was kind of pressing for it a little bit more than I was. And so we decided that we were going to do that. And we told all our friends and family. And then about 3 weeks later, we were home, and he called me into the living room, and he said, you know, Kiri, we need to talk. And so I came in, I sat down, and I looked at him, and he said, I think I'm confused about my sexuality. And this was, you know, that was the last thing I expected to hear. I expected to hear, like, okay, you didn't clean out the cat litter box or something. And so I was absolutely stunned, and I just sort of screamed because I didn't know if he was joking or what, and then he started to cry, and so I knew he wasn't joking. I knew this was serious, and he told me that night that he was fantasizing about men, and over the course of our conversation, which lasted all night, it became very clear to me that he wanted to explore those fantasies on his own, and that our relationship would have to end. So I was very upset and shocked and stunned, and I hadn't seen any of this coming at all. And so it was the next day that I kind of spoke to a friend of mine who was a gay man, actually, who said he didn't quite believe him. He thought maybe he was just making that up as a strange excuse to get out of the marriage. So I went into his computer, I had his password, and I'd had it for a really long time, I'd never used it, never even thought about using it, and went in and I found, that's when I found gay porn and pictures of himself naked that he'd been sending to men, and, you know, he'd been on Craigslist, men for men ad section looking, you know, looking for sex. So that's when I called him at work, and I just said, you know, you've been cheating on me. And he confirmed that he had, and that it had been going on for years.
So
it was quite a surreal.
Let me ask you questions about yourself so that people can understand a little more about you. First of all, let's tell them your age.
I'm 40 now.
Okay,
I was 36 when this happened.
All right, so you're relatively young. You grew up in a generation where gay wasn't really hidden in the closet.
No.
Unlike when I was growing up, a generation before you.
Yeah.
So you certainly probably had gay friends, a lot of gay exposure. You've been a writer for many years. You've met many gay people through the theater.
Yeah,
world,
and he
correct?
Was a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and he didn't grow up in a religious family, and also he had a gay sister who was completely out, and her, you know, her parents knew, everybody knew, and he, you know. So, yeah, it was a little baffling why he would have done this for so long, definitely baffling, and I think it just goes to show you how difficult it still is.
Absolutely. Now, in retrospect, now that you're looking back,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have time now to look back on this. Were there red flags that you missed?
No. There was no red flags in terms of him being gay.
Mm-hmm.
None at all for me. Obviously, if I'd gone into his computer, there would have been huge red flags, like waving everywhere. But looking back, our sex life had dwindled.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, I know a lot of couples whose sex life dwindles after 10 years. So I wasn't, that never said to me gay.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I look back, I mean, obviously that was the issue. But at the time, I just thought, okay, well, we've been in a long-term relationship. And this is what happens. I wanted more, you know, I probably wanted it more than he did. But he also seemed determined to kind of work on it. We went to therapy
mm-hmm.
about it. And, you know, we could go, like, towards the middle or end of the relationship, we could go, like, 2 months without it. And, you know, I just thought, okay, well, we're in a long-term relationship. I guess this is what happens, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but no,
well,
I didn't find any Playgirls under the bed or Liberace CDs or anything, you know, that I joke around about in my book. For me, I think for some other women, there's some more red flags. There was just none for me.
I think what the problem is, and maybe Jonathan could comment on this, that a lot of times we have this stereotypical image of what gay is.
Right.
Growing up with the media and growing up looking at men who are feminine or swishy and who are all decorators and metrosexual
right.
looking.
Right.
Male
right. And I think we need to throw that thinking out the window because it simply doesn't apply. There are plenty of wildly flamboyant people who are extremely straight and have a new woman in their bed every night, and there are plenty of very extremely straight-looking guys who are wildly gay. So I think we need to throw that that thinking out the window and all those stereotypes. And even if you had found Liberace CDs and Ricky Martin,
yeah, maybe
CDs,
he just likes Liberace. And after, you know, I still keep in touch with my ex, and, you know, and one of the things that actually made it difficult for him to come out, he told me, was this stereotype of what the gay man looks like, acts like, what type of music he listens to, how he likes to dress, and my fiancé fit none of that. And so he would actually, and I think Bonnie, you and I had a discussion about this, he would actually think, okay, I'm not gay, that, you know, he would see that stereotype and think, okay, that's not me, you know, even
mm-hmm.
though he was having sex with men. It's like, you know, if you're
yeah.
having sex
well,
with men, you are gay.
In a long-term relationship like Carrie had, you know, we become accustomed to things and it becomes the norm 2, 3, 4 years down the road that the sex life dwindled. And Carrie, I think you didn't have much to compare it to because you hadn't been in many long-term relationships.
Yeah, this was my first, so, yeah.
Yeah, we just come to accept this as normal, and we're, I think, perhaps blind to any red flags, even if they existed. I've had plenty of female clients who, there were red flags, but they kind of looked the other way, or they weren't open to the possibility that their man could even be cheating, whether that's with a woman or a man. Because they just get very settled into the relationship. And a lot of people, not Carrie, but a lot of people might be in denial, and it's an extremely difficult thing to accept that your man, A, might be cheating, and B, could possibly be gay.
Well, I think a lot of people are confused because when, you know, I was growing up, I was always under the assumption that a gay person wanted someone who was of the same sex. And so even if we have some inkling, I mean, I think a lot of it is because we don't understand homosexuality. We feel if a man falls in love with us, wants to marry us, have our children with us, that, you know, even if he had these kind of urges, you know, that this is, I know that, you know, like I say, growing up before both of you, I grew up in the days of, you know, Kinsey reports saying that 87% of all men have a sexual encounter. It's not unusual, you know, so I think that a lot of times, even if, you know, we have some hints or some suspicions, we don't understand it. But Jonathan, I wanted to ask you, I have a wonderful male gay peer counselor who works with the men who are coming out that I work with. Mm-hmm. His name is Doug. And he really makes a point, maybe you could expand on this a little bit, that there's a difference between, you know, for gay men, one of the reasons why they have such a difficult time is there's a difference between sexual orientation and sexual identity, and that the concepts are similar but really different, because sexual orientation is the degree to which a person's attracted to the same gender, and it automatically is wired to their brain, but sexual identity, you know, or sexual orientation is different in the sense that I think a lot of men themselves who are gay feel they don't identify with gay men who are the stereotypical ones, and as long as they can still perform, and I say perform loosely, you know, heterosexually with a woman, that that will reassure them that they're not gay. Do you deal with that in your counseling?
Right, I do, and a lot of these men are in great denial, and it's very difficult for them to be gay in our society, whether it's because of religious issues or family issues or even the career that they might be in. I have plenty of clients who work in careers where it's unacceptable to be gay, such as firefighters or police officers, or in New York, a lot of people who work in finance. It's very difficult for them to come out. And frankly, from a very young age, they're programmed to believe that straight is normal. We get messages from society, from culture, from Hollywood, from magazines, from books, that that's the norm. And if they're feeling anything that's a bit off from that, they start to develop great anxiety, depression even, and all sorts of conflicts, internal conflicts.
Well, this is exactly, you know, a conversation I've had with my ex fairly recently where he said the exact same thing. You know, from the time you're a child, you're even just told things like, oh, you're going to grow up and be a lady killer. Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, to a little girl, oh, you're going to grow up and find your prince. And you're not told, oh, you're going to grow up and find your prince or your princess.
Right,
and
so we're programmed that.
Yeah, so he, you know, if you don't feel that way, you're automatically, you're really going to think there's something horribly wrong with you. Even if all your friends are supportive, and even if your parents are supportive, and even if you live in L.A. or New York or San Francisco, it's still, you still feel like, and who wants to take on all that hassle? You know, it is still a huge, enormous hassle.
And,
you know,
right,
I agree to a great extent.
I'm sorry.
No, I was going to ask Carrie, though. You know, I really do understand it all, and believe me, I have tremendous sympathy for the men, and I have a wonderful, you know, male support system of gay men who do come to terms with themselves. But I always say that there has to be, to me, the issue of responsibility.
Yeah.
And in your case, Carrie, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of understanding and sympathy, but on the other hand, this man was out there cheating on you.
Oh, believe me. I mean,
what?
It's all in my book, Bonnie. I mean, the understanding and the sort of, you know, the way I'm speaking right now was me intellectualizing it, but
mm-hmm.
emotionally, I was absolutely decimated, blown apart completely,
mm-hmm.
and I'm still, and I probably will be for the rest of my life. And it wasn't really even, okay, you're gay. It was, you are cheating chronically over and over and over on me while simultaneously pressing me to get married, while simultaneously living with me, while
mm-hmm.
simultaneously telling me you love me on like a daily basis. This is nothing that I can just brush aside and say, well, I understand you were confused. And you know, I try to do that for my own sanity to a certain extent. But
mm-hmm.
trust me when I say I had a complete and total psychotic breakdown.
Oh, well, I believe it. Because
and
I
was
well,
not
I
myself
think, I think you're
for
doing
a very
quite
long
well
time.
Considering.
Huh?
Jonathan, let me ask you this question, Jonathan. Like in Carrie's situation with her boyfriend, as mm-hmm. you know, many of our husbands, you know, from the women in my support network will tell you, you know, it's one thing when you're questioning yourself or when you're not quite sure, but how about men? And, you know, I would say the overwhelming majority of, you know, women that I work with, you know, have this situation where the men are beyond questioning themselves. They're out there doing it and doing it frequently or doing it often.
Mm-hmm.
How does a man stay in that kind of a state of denial while he's living that life?
Again, society makes it very difficult for them to come out. And they know
not coming out, but do they accept the fact that they are gay? Are they just
obviously a part of them when they're in the throes of gay sex must think that they might have something going on there. But then,
you would hope.
But then the other part, the part that is trying to fit into the marriage or their workplace, I think far outweighs that rendezvous that they might have on their lunch hour or after work, or in New York we have a lot of porn shops that the gays tend, or these people on the download tend to frequent, and that's usually what leads them into therapy. The great conflict that exists in their head, they're not sleeping, they're not eating, they're losing weight, they're ridden with guilt, and they come in to see me to try to hopefully get that straightened out, no pun intended.
And good pun, what my, ex-fiancé told me and what I saw in his emails with his men was essentially I was reality and they were fantasy. So he had actually split his existence into two worlds, one that was real and one that wasn't, which,
right.
That's got to be a hell of a way to live.
That's the epitome of compartmentalizing.
Yeah, he compartmentalized unbelievably. And the thing that's so shocking is that I didn't see, there was no signs of that. So in other words, he wasn't drinking heavily. He wasn't starting to take drugs. He wasn't, spontaneously crying. He wasn't distancing himself emotionally. He had done it so successfully that he was completely integrated into our relationship. All my friends were jealous of me that I had such a wonderful guy. That's how much he had completely compartmentalized it mentally.
Yeah, and it's not surprising because they have to, people who are dealing with this have to be extremely clever and manipulative at creating an image. It's not too different from a drug user where they're trying to hide a behavior of the drug use or alcohol or whatever it might be. They become very manipulative and very clever at doing this.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask Jonathan one thing on that, going along that subject line. I don't know if you agree with this or not, but, from my years of experience with this, I stand by this, that when people live a lie on a daily basis, as these guys do, they develop really sociopathic behavior because, when you live a lie every day, then you just start lying. It becomes really automatic in your responses. And even when there's nothing to lie about, you just, continue a lie because you're living a lie every day.
I do agree in that one lie leads to the next, and they're having to create things to cover up a huge aspect of their life. Whether that's sociopathic or not, I think that probably is measured by the hurt that it can cause others or our society. Yeah, so I do agree in that respect.
How about narcissism? Where do you think this falls into it?
We
deal with a lot of it.
I think there's an element of that, but certainly not classic narcissism. I think that's probably secondary to other issues that they're probably experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Carrie, in your relationship, let's say the sex went down, and I would bring this up to Jonathan also, because, and you justify that in your own mind, as many people would, and when you're in a long-term relationship, sex doesn't become the primary driving force.
Yeah.
Even though you're only 36, but, where you think that, other people, say when they're in long-term relationships, that happens. And by the way, Carrie, possibly they're in a long-term relationship with a gay man, too. But
possibly. Who knows? Anything's possible,
Exactly.
I've given up trying to figure out what's going on with people. But yeah.
How about intimacy? Because to me, intimacy is like a major part of a relationship. And when you dwindle on the sex, it seems like the intimacy kind of goes away with that, too.
Well, I suppose everyone defines intimacy differently, but that was sort of the interesting thing about my ex, was that he was always extremely affectionate, Very open, emotionally, you know, we would, you know, I mean, when you're 10 years in, you don't have deep, dark talks about your relationship as much as maybe you did in the beginning. But, you know, we always, like, hold hands when we walk down the street. We always, you know, we were always kissing each other. We celebrated Valentine's Day, like, it was only, like, a month before he came out, and he gave me this beautiful card. And then he wrote all these wonderful things at the bottom about how he wanted to grow old with me. And every day that we were together, it convinced him more and more that I was the one for him and all this. And he would give me cards from our cats, you know, just really. So intimacy, you know, the only thing I did notice was that, you know, when you first get in a relationship, you sort of snuggle in bed and you're always wrapped around each other. And that started to go by the wayside. But again, I thought, okay, this is like a long-term relationship thing, not a gay thing. So, but, you know, emotionally, I never saw him distance himself. He never distanced himself. There was never like a picking of fights or, you know, or he's off somewhere and I don't know where and he's not coming home and I can't reach him on the phone. I mean, we're always in touch.
So he wasn't trying to sabotage the relationship.
No, but the odd thing is he tried that the very night he told me. The very night he came out, he pulled his one sabotage move, which was that he was a musician and he was set to go play a gig in upstate New York. And I said, oh, great, well, it's a Saturday. That means I can go. And he said, oh, well, the band doesn't really want, you know, girlfriends coming. Now, this was a complete 180 degrees from 10 years of being with a musician who wanted me at every gig.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a little upset about that. I was very baffled by that. And then he just broke down and told me. So that was a real switcheroo for him to not want me somewhere. And when I asked him later about it, he admitted it was that he was trying to distance himself from me.
And that's interesting. And one of the things that I advise men and women, you know, people ask me a lot, how do you know if someone's cheating? And that's one of the things that I tell people. Are they deviating from their routine behavior? Are they grooming themselves differently? Are they dressing differently? Are they making last-minute changes to plans? Are they not inviting you to go on the tour with the band? You know, deviation from behavior, from the norm.
That was the one deviation, and I think he just, you know, I think I gave, you know, I for one, I don't think he was out doing this, like, every night. And he was out doing it frequently, but it was probably every couple of months. And, you know, it's not like he was sleeping the night at these guys' places. And it's
right,
not like it's not like he would leave their place and then have an hour-long phone conversation. I got a lot of flack for saying this to Marie Claire. However, it's different, I think, when you have an affair with a woman. You know, you're emailing her, you're trying to talk to her on the phone, you're leaving to go talk on your cell phone. These guys would get together, there would be a sexual encounter, and they would leave and never see each other again. So there was a lot more opportunity to cover that kind of thing up. You know, you show up, he would do it after work and show up at home and cook dinner. And there would be no deviation from the schedule. Why? Because it took 15 minutes.
And I say that's a long time for a lot of men, because a lot of times women say to me, I'm with him 24/7. There's no way in the world he could be with someone else.
Trust
and
me.
And we have guys who come and tell us that.
Unfortunately, there is.
Well, we tell women. I've had guys who have told me they've gone out to dinner with their wives, and while their wives are at the table, they're in the bathroom doing it.
I'll give you one better. Without mentioning any names or not too much detail that might identify someone, you know, I had a person who was involved with a man. And he was married, and they would go on, the guy he was seeing was in a relationship with a guy. So my client and his wife and this gay couple would go on lavish vacations together. And in the middle of the night, client would meet lover in the hallway or somewhere in the hotel for a quickie.
Well, that happens to our women all the time, Jonathan,
yeah.
I hate to tell you.
Yeah.
And I always say it takes 30 seconds. I mean, we've had guys tell us they're doing it in the dressing room at Macy's.
Right.
So, you know,
and I mean, the thing I really want to, like, I want to express is that there's no way you really can keep an eye on someone 24/7 unless you have a GPS device on their shoe and you're tracking them via your computer or something.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, and you know what? And you shouldn't expect yourself to. You need to forgive yourself if this is going on behind your back. You don't expect the person who claims to love you to lie to you on and to be so devious. You really just
mm-hmm.
don't. And if you find out it's happening, you know, don't beat yourself up that you didn't know it.
Yeah, and even if he did have a GPS tracking system,
people can do things with those. Right?
He could still cheat. And I always tell my clients, I say, look, someone can always cheat. If they're going to do it, they're going to find a way to do it. And I would say 99.9% of the time, they always get caught. It might take 10 years, but they always do get caught because it's very difficult to maintain a lie for that long.
Right.
Jonathan, I just want to ask Jonathan's opinion on this. You know, you were mentioning earlier, Jonathan, that a lot of men are afraid of coming out, you know, because of all kinds of problems that it creates with society, and I understand that. You know, and religious upbringing and beliefs. Why is it, do you think, in your opinion, that some men have no problem accepting who they are, and they can grow up in a very similar neighborhood environment, religious background, while other men just can't deal with it at all?
It's a good question. I think a lot of it probably has to do with family of origin, support system that they have in place. I think those two things are huge. Religious issues, I think, also come into play. It's a really good question. I just think support system. I don't know if I have the exact answer for that one.
Everybody's different.
If I could probably help a whole lot of people avoid situations like this, like Carrie had.
Carrie, did your boyfriend say why he was having trouble with, you know, the
whole issue? Yeah, he just didn't want to be gay. And he had a vision for himself of his life, and that didn't involve a man, is what he told me. And my answer to him was, well, mine didn't involve a homosexual fiancé either. You know, from the time he was a kid, he had a certain idea, as we all do, of what we want our lives to be. And sometimes we take that to the extreme, even when our lives are clearly deviating from that fantasy or from that ideal. And he was clinging to that idea. I really don't think it had anything to do with his parents, although, you know, it's always difficult. He could have said something to his sister, who was gay and who at least certainly would have given him some support.
Mm-hmm.
His friends were, you know, very supportive of him when he came out. Even I would have understood if he had come to me before his long, you know, process of cheating. But it wasn't what he wanted for himself.
I was just going to ask you this, and I don't mean to offend you in any way, but you're a beautiful woman. I mean, physically beautiful. You're brilliant and smart. You know, you're a prize package for any man in the world. Do you feel ever that he was using you as a trophy in any way?
No, I'm probably too much of a bitch to be a trophy. I'm sure I put him through some stuff.
Mary, it's all your fault.
Anyone who looks at me and says I want her as my girlfriend because she's pretty will probably think differently in a week or so when I'm giving them a hard time about something.
However, it is interesting, and Bonnie, I agree. Carrie is a beautiful woman and talented, and maybe some guys who think they might be gay, they go to the extreme of finding such a beautiful woman. Yeah.
To put on their arms and to show the world, look, you know, I can get the most beautiful woman in the world who's brilliant and smart.
I'm not a supermodel, as flattering as that is, I'm not a supermodel. And the pictures you're seeing on my website are a little airbrushed, so
okay,
it's not that great in real life. But
you're a 9, not a 10.
Well, you know, like any relationship, it's like, you know, the person sees you when you're not looking your best. The person sees you sick, and he has seen me sick. He'd seen me angry. He'd seen me upset. He had seen me when people in my family were dying, and I was absolutely out of my mind with grief. So he had seen way more than just the, oh, here's the pretty facade. So, and he had seen, you know, it's not like he used me for 6 months because I was pretty and then I, you know, and then moved on. This was a serious relationship where we had seen each other through tragedies and illnesses and, you know, all kinds of things. It was a real relationship. I think the only deviation was sexually. And I think it was something he fought for a very long time, and partly because he probably did love me and did want to be in a relationship with me and did want to be married to me. And I think that what was happening to him was completely against his wishes and desires and plans, because I do believe that homosexuality is hardwired and it's in your DNA and you don't choose it.
Right. Well, did he ever say to you, Carrie, that he was hoping that if he loved you enough?
Yeah, he did say that he was hoping it would go away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you find that, Jonathan, in the men you're counseling?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the gay clients I have, you know, as I'm working with them to come out, they tell me they wish they weren't born this way. They say, you know, it'd be so much easier if I were straight. So I think that certainly supports Carrie's point about her ex.
Right, and I think that, you know, one time I did a survey, you know, many years ago, and I was working for a gay newspaper doing my column called Straight Talk, you know, about straight perceptions of the gay community. And I did a survey with close to 325 men at that point. And I said to them, the question was, if you could take a pill that would make you straight tomorrow, would you take it? And all but three people said yes. And
yeah.
I really believe they meant that, because it's a very hard way to have to live in a society that's so unaccepting. And even though both of you are in New York, you know, I recently read the story in New York about, you know, the two gay guys who were brutalized, you know, by, you know, some, you know, Latino gang there and terrible things happening to them, that even in this day and age, and even in New York City, this still happens. It happens everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, imagine living a life where you aren't sure if you should hold your lover's hand on the street because you're not sure who's behind you. I mean, that's a scary way to live, you know.
I think we all acknowledge how hard it is to be gay in today's society, but once again, some people embrace it. They live through it. You know, they learn to love themselves in spite of it and beat the odds. But, you know, how about your boyfriend now? What's his situation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you talk about people who do beat the odds, and he is one of those people. He eventually did become honest with himself. And yeah, he lives with a man, he's gay, and he's lived with this man for a while now, and he's now open and gay, and I'm really, you know, I wish he had done it sooner, obviously. I wish that the cheating and the betrayal and the lies hadn't happened, but I am so glad that he at least manned up. And here's what I think is so scary, Bonnie, and that you've probably seen this, Jonathan. I'm getting guys who, you know, I've had some guys email me and say like, I'm in a relationship right now and I'm gay. And you know what? And they'll say, thank you for, you know, I'm glad I read your book because now I'm going to tell her because I was just going to pick a fight and leave.
Yeah.
Or, I, you know, and it's like, and thank God he told me what it was about. And he just didn't one day say, you know what, I'm not feeling it anymore.
Yeah, and as difficult as it was for you, Carrie, at least you had information to then process.
I had the truth.
Try to make some sense of it.
The truth is always better. The truth is always the way, you know.
Yeah,
and yes, you will.
Every week I see a new client who comes in, and my boyfriend, my girlfriend left me. I don't know what's going on. And they're just, the anxiety levels are through the roof. And, you know, as difficult as your situation was, you have it. You have the information. You can try to make some sense of it.
Yeah, I mean, if after 10 years he had suddenly come to me and said, you know, I'm just not, you know, just don't feel it for you anymore and I need to move on, I would have been absolutely devastated. And I was devastated to learn that he was gay. But, I mean, I would have been compounded by just not knowing what was going on. So I do give him the credit that he manned up enough to say it was about men.
Right. And, you know, unfortunately, statistics show and surveys have been done by, you know, lots of people in the gay community also, that between 45 and 50% of gay married men will never be honest with their wives. You know, they're just not going to tell them. And they'll make up a million reasons and excuses and leave that woman, devastated, never understanding what she did wrong in a marriage when she tried harder than most wives will ever try, as most straight wives do, to keep that marriage
together. You know, Bonnie, I think that number is probably higher among straight men.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more than 32% of straight men who are married aren't honest with their wives.
Oh, well, no, I'm saying 50%.
Well, maybe more than that aren't honest with their wives. I don't know. I mean, I think it's I know what your point is.
But you know what? You know, I always say, though, Jonathan, with these marriages where they're different, you know, I don't compare sexuality to infidelity because with sexuality, that's living a lie every day and taking away the woman's self-esteem, her sexual esteem, a sense of who she is. You know, infidelity, I think, in marriages is, you know, certainly something that happens and women suffer through it, but at least they had a base of reality through the marriage, you know, at some point. And I always say it wouldn't matter to me whether somebody cheated on me with a man or a woman. I would be devastated.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that living a lie with somebody every day and them resenting you because, you know, a lot of times these guys look at you as the keeper of their, you know, prison key there, that you're entrapping them there, even though they put themselves in that position. And they have tremendous resentment towards their wives and hostility, where I think with a straight marriage it doesn't happen as much. So I mean, neither way is good, but I think these marriages are based on a lie from the time they start, and I think that's the problem.
Yeah,
I mean, I've gotten a lot of emails from women who've said that they're, you know, the guys, you know, that they've just discovered this about their husbands or their boyfriends and that, you know, the guy was very angry, you know, and just had anger issues. And my ex never had that. And he was just always a really sweet, nice guy. But I think I got lucky in that. And I think that a lot of these men really do really beat down the woman's self-esteem for years and years. You know, and by the time they do leave the relationship, the woman's just so, you know, has no, I mean, because I know when, you know, my self-esteem went straight down through the ground and I didn't even have all that. I didn't have years of somebody beating me down because he was, you know, because he hated himself. So I can only imagine what women go through who've had that, you know, on top of it, who've had to deal with anger issues.
Yeah.
Right, and I always say also, though, that the women who have nice guys like yours, Carrie, you know, sometimes it's harder for them.
I should have known then. He was too nice. Too nice.
Well, it's not only that.
You've got to watch out for those nice ones.
Yeah, but, you know, no, when you have a good relationship, those are the hardest ones to get over because, you know, the reality is that you did have a wonderful relationship and they are your best friends.
Right.
And you do have a life with them going everywhere. And I would say about 20% of our women have wonderful marriages or, you know, they think they have wonderful marriages.
Right.
And, you know, they've had the best of friendships, you know, even if there's something was off, you know, because if you would have stayed with them another 10 years.
Yeah.
As often happens, you know, a lot of these marriages are long term, 10, 20, 30, 40 years. The more years that go on, you know, the more things start to break apart.
Yeah.
And if you don't know why it's breaking apart and you just start questioning yourself and internalizing it.
I'm definitely glad that it happened. You know, I was 36 when it happened, and to me that was like, oh, my God, this is horrible to have to go out and start dating at 36. But on the other hand, I was grateful that he hadn't waited until I was 46, 56, 66, you know.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, but, yeah, so.
Yeah, I see with the women that I see, sometimes they, you know, they reach a point where they become comfortable with this discomfort. They become comfortable being uncomfortable, and they sort of accept that as how their relationship is and should be, and they just have nothing else to compare it to. And I think that, you know, 5 years turns into 10, turns into 20, and before they know it, they're you know, they are 66 in a relationship, that unhappily. And this is true with what we're talking about tonight, but also just in general, women in bad relationships.
Well, I think Misty says it best, Misty, you know, when you talk about dancing.
Oh, Misty, where are you? I haven't heard Misty speak.
I'm here.
Say something, Misty.
I'm intently listening to all the words of wisdom both of you sharing. And yes, I talk about the circles crazy. I think women especially fall into that when they get so comfortable with the misery and they just start dancing inside the circle. You know, once you cross over into that circle of crazy, Mm-hmm. And you just start adjusting yourself to adjust to it and to adapt to something more, adapt to more. And you keep losing who you are. And then you wake up, you know, mm-hmm. 10 years, uh-huh. 15 years.
Right. And that's the danger or the tragedy of getting close to someone. We you know, our identity has become fused with that other person. And then when the relationship does end, we're often left aimless and really not knowing who we are anymore. And that does take a great deal of work to feel integrated again and get
back
on your
feet. That's essentially like what I did with my sexuality. I fit into that 20% of women who everything was great and this is your best friend and you have like this really supportive, wonderful, nice like person. And but sexually I was absolutely like I would start towards the end of the relationship I was having all kinds of fantasies about cheating. Which was making me feel terrible because I felt like I was really sexually deprived. And to be 36 years old and be looking at a long, sexless life ahead of you really actually was extremely upsetting for me. And and so I really resent that he was out getting, you know, having his sexual fulfillment while I was home being faithful and being sexually frustrated all of the time.
Absolutely.
So,
and I think that's a major factor is, you know, this whole sexual issue that so many of our women have their sexuality stripped away in front of them. You know, I don't know if you ran into this, you know, because I don't want to get too personal with you, but, you know, a lot of our women, they keep making overtures to their husbands who keep, you know, telling them they're either too highly sexed or why are you pressuring me or you're a nymphomaniac, why are you, you know.
Yeah, no, Bonnie, you can't get, it's impossible to get too personal with me. I don't know if you read my book, but it's pretty impossible. You know, my fiancé wasn't that crude about it. He wouldn't mm-hmm. say things like, oh, you nymphomaniac, but his was more insidious because mm-hmm. I wouldn't get any sexual vibe off of him. Like, I'm dating mm-hmm. a straight guy now, we hope. And, you know, like he looks at me and his eyes sparkle, you know, and if I put on a sexy dress, it's like I'm not getting out the door quickly, you know,
mm-hmm.
whereas my fiance would just, I would get no vibe. I mean, I could have walked past him in a leather, you know, dominatrix outfit and he would have been like, oh, that's cute.
Right.
You know,
and that's
like,
why I
no.
say we have women part of our support group who really are models and television, you know, personalities and. You know, it's unbelievable to me. You know, you think, boy, if I look like that, you know, everything would be there for me. But they tell me the same thing. They can strip naked in front of their, you know, husbands or boyfriends, and there's just no interest. It's like, okay, honey, now what? You know, let's go to bed.
Well, I've had clients, you know, gay guys dealing with this, with their sexuality, their orientation,
mm-hmm.
and you know, they've been. Their social circles are such that they meet supermodels, literally, and
mm-hmm.
their friends try to set them up with supermodels, and they're entirely uninterested. There have been some who have gone to their doctor to get a prescription for Viagra
mm-hmm.
Because they simply can't get aroused when they're with even a supermodel. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, if you read my book, you see, and one of your listeners who read my book mentioned this in an email to you, that I
mm-hmm.
end up going off the deep end sexually.
mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was quite that, but yeah, like right after the relationship, I just dove into sexual relationships with people. And part of that was that because I had been deprived for so long of feeling like a sexual person.
Right, but that's not uncommon because we.
I guess you people do that with straight relationships
We derive our sense of self from others and how people might find us attractive or not. And following a cheating incident, gay or straight or whatever the case might be, you know, a lot of times the person will look at themselves and think, "Am I too fat? Am I ugly? Is it something I did? Is it something I didn't do?"
Right.
And then that's usually followed by the person going out there and grabbing attention from others to try to reestablish who they are. So not uncommon at all.
Well, what was interesting for me is that I started going for the guys who are the exact opposite of my fiance, which I guess is also normal when you break up. But my fiance was like this respectful, nice person, and so I started going for these bad boy types. And if
did you start dating those inmates?
The inmates? No.
Did you become pen pals with the inmates?
No, I didn't go that far. But
they're all having gay sex also, Jonathan.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure, he wasn't going in that direction either.
If a guy wasn't sexually all over me, or you know, by the end of the date, I would think he was gay, and I would just move on. I mean, I got so messed up. My head just got crazy.
You're in good shape
now.
Huh?
You're in good shape now.
Oh yeah.
I think it takes a long time to be in a good shape. I don't think these, you know, relationships, you know, quite evolve as quickly as other ones where there's a straight, you know, partner there, because there's so many other issues we have to deal with. As far as, first of all, trusting ourselves, right, Curie?
Trusting ourselves and the other person, I mean, both things. I mean, I really, it gets better, but I don't think it'll ever go away entirely. I know now it's so easy for people to lie, even people who love you and who are good people. And I don't trust that I have any instinct that's going to tell me anything. I know it's not true. I know it's not true now. So.
Well, I guess. You know, what you can do is when you meet somebody, you can tell them you want them to meet your Aunt Bonnie.
Yeah, I'm going to bring them to you.
And I'll meet you there for lunch with your boyfriend, and I'll let you know.
You know, so Bonnie, I wanted to ask you, like, I saw on your website that you help women get into guys' computers if they're suspicious.
Well, not only now the computers, but also their cell phones.
Oh, okay. So I'll be calling you about that, too.
That's a pretty good market on that one, Bonnie.
Yes, well, you know,
I could refer a lot of people your way.
Yes, that'll be fine. You know,
Bonnie, will you help
them.
Me get into Jonathan's computer?
And
his cell phone.
Well, his cell phone I could help you with.
Well, wait, you could just open up his cell phone and look at it, right? So
there you go.
But now you can actually install spyware on someone's cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
And know every call they're making, every text they're making.
Can you do that remotely, though?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing what technology has done to relationships, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or cell phones. And
I think it's wonderful because look how many people don't have to live in the dark anymore.
At least once a week I have someone coming in talking about how they saw a suspicious email or a suspicious text. He's posting pictures of this person on his Facebook page at least once a week. So for me, it's been good. It's been great for my business.
Jonathan, can you mention a few things, you know, in your article in the Metro Papers, you gave some tips for women. Of course, I have my checklist on my website at gayhusbands.com.
I know.
But,
my
you know,
ex didn't fit any of them except for the dwindling sex life.
Well,
you know,
what's on your checklist, Bonnie?
Wait, I want to say one thing about Bonnie's checklist.
It's very similar to your checklist, Jonathan, you know, and my first book that, you know, I have, it's The Gay Husband Checklist for Women Who Wonder, where I really go, and I also have a checklist in that book of the prototype of woman that a gay man seeks.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's important to read also. I'm going to get you a copy of that book, Curie, so you can make sure you're...
Well, I'm telling you,
like,
it wouldn't... You know what, Bonnie, if I'd had that book before I started my relationship with my ex, it wouldn't have helped me because he didn't fit any of those things. In fact, one time I remember some friends of mine were going to a gay bar, and I was like, hey, why don't we go with them? You know, it'd be funny. And he's like, no, I'm not really interested. Like, he didn't even want to go to the gay bar to check it out, you know?
Well, of course
right.
not.
Well,
a lot of times they
don't. But, you know, I always, on my checklist, I have if you have a normal sexual appetite, but your mate thinks you have an excessive sexual needs, and that there's a decline in sexual activity early in your relationship. Some men are really repulsed by what I call normal sexual activity. And I think it really key thing...
Well, what would be considered normal sexual activity?
Well, for instance, if a man doesn't like to touch a woman in places, you know, I'm not going to say oral sex, even though some women say that, but...
You just said it.
No, I mean about that being necessarily a key thing, because I know straight men who just aren't into that, but that doesn't mean they're not straight. But some men just don't want to touch you, you know, or they think that it's disgusting or they have to wash right away. You know, not normal.
That would be weird.
The word bisexual, that means gay to me.
If they're having sex with a man, they're pretty gay to me, too.
Well, to me, that's the dividing line. You know, I always tell people, to me, it's like in religion. You know, I'm Jewish. I know, you know, you are too, Jonathan. But the thing is, the dividing line is if you believe in Jesus, that makes you a Christian. I don't care if you wear a yarmulke or a Jewish star with it, you're a Christian. And as far as the dividing line with sexuality is if it's a penis, it's gay. It's that simple.
Depends where it is.
What, the penis?
Right.
Oh, well, I'm saying if that's what you're desiring. Because a lot of men,
okay,
you know, they try to justify themselves. And, you know, men who are into transsexuals and into, you know, whatever their scene is, or women with breasts, but the man has a penis. If you want a penis, it's gay. If your partner visits gay bars and he's claiming he's only there to hang out with his gay male friends, you know, straight men
weird.
Do not go to gay bars to hang out with their gay friends. You know, if you
Oh my! According to your list, Bonnie, I might be gay because I've been.
I told
gay
you.
Bars.
Maybe
Robin,
we should look at his software.
Robin fits everything on that list.
I'm sorry, Jonathan, but you know you have to really think about that. If your mate is watching gay porno movies with gay male scenes, I mean, straight men aren't doing that. Trust me. A lot of men who make homophobic comments because that's a form of, you know, self-hatred or to try to throw a woman off. But a lot of times it really is a form of self-hatred because they don't identify with those other gay people and they feel that, you know, they just have, I know that a lot of men who do that.
Well, it's a trait that they don't like in themselves, so they, you know, they're projecting that onto others and they're despising that.
Well, let me ask you guys a question because it gets so hard to tell who might be gay. I mean, I just wish everyone would have a tattoo, but
like
honestly,
a scarlet G on their forehead, right?
So Jim McGreevy, in his biography, which I didn't read, but I read an excerpt, you know, he said he became a womanizer to cover up his homosexuality. So there are actually men who are gay who are really, really, really into women and, like, dating all the time, too. I mean, and there's a guy, and like...
But they're just trying to compensate, like
yeah,
the guy
I know, but I mean...
With the,
those
with
are, like,
the
kinds of guys I was dating after the break. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go for these guys who really, really, really like women, and then I can get them all. But, I mean, geez, there seems to be, like, no, like, real concrete way
sure,
of knowing.
It's possible that in your post-relationship you may have actually gone out with gay guys.
I probably went out with more gay guys than
you
know,
realize that.
Afterwards.
And that happens a lot, too.
but as long as the sex was good to help you through your tough period.
Well, that's the thing. If a guy's having sex with you and he's having sex with other women and he has all this, you know, female porn and all this other stuff that straight guys have, but he's secretly, I mean, how would you know? I mean, there just seems to be no way to know.
I can tell you I have countless clients that you would never in a million years think were gay. I'm sure plenty of who look and act just like the guys that you went out with after your relationship. and on their lunch hour, they're going in New York to these porn shops and they're sticking their penis through what they call a
glory
hole. And, you know, the person on the other side of that is not a female. So, you know, for that 30 seconds or whatever it is, they're as gay as they come. And these men, Carrie, are probably a lot like what you did, like macho type A types.
No, I don't date macho guys, but...
okay, just those type A...
Just players, bad
right.
Boys, players.
Bending you over, wham, bam, thank you,
But, you know,
I mean, I always say that there are those men, you know, and I also identify them as limbo men. And these, to me, are men who are stuck in between two worlds. You know, they're emotionally straight, but they're sexually gay.
Right.
And, you know, they're really torn in between both worlds because they just can't accept that gay world. And, you know, they're only comfortable in the straight world. So, you know, it is hard to tell a lot of times, Carrie, but I think that in any relationship, you have to first really get to know a person. You have to really know that person's family, their background, past relationships.
Well, I thought I knew all that. I mean, really. You know?
But I think a lot of times also where you can't blame yourself as far as not knowing.
No, you can't.
You know, a lot of times when guys who are in their 20s, I mean, they really, a lot of times their sexual identity doesn't start emerging more or less until they're in their late 20s, early 30s, you know, that gay side of them. You know, is really suppressed. And I know men who honestly tell me that, and I believe them, that they really didn't feel these feelings towards other men until they were in their 30s.
Right.
They just weren't thinking about it. They weren't fantasizing about it. I mean, not the majority, but there are some men. And I honestly do believe them. And they go through this passageway called bisexuality, where they think that, you know, they're bisexual because, you know, they have a woman who they love and make love to. And I know I had several gay men tell me themselves that they watch straight porno. So you can't use that as a thing because in the straight porno, they're fantasizing as a woman.
We know who they were watching in that porno.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
And
where they're fantasizing, they're the woman.
And that's what and I've actually heard that a lot where female clients will say, you know, we watch porn all the time. We have such a great sex life. How can this be happening? And I say, well, who is he watching when you guys have that porn playing, the guy or the woman?
And who is he fantasizing about when he's having sex with you?
Right.
Because I have gay men tell me all the time they will make love to their wives, and their wives will be satisfied. But, you know, they are fantasizing about men in order to do it.
Right. And then what I've also seen is couples who might be into threesomes or swinging, and it presents a safe opportunity for the guy
exactly.
to either be with or see another man.
Exactly. And we have, I have plenty of women coming to me with that problem, too, and I say, get out. Don't say anything that you're not comfortable with.
So Carrie, if your man is okay seeing you with another man, that's a huge red flag.
I'm not talking about anything like that.
As I say, Carrie, when you're ready to get serious with somebody, I'll come and meet you in New York for lunch, and you just tell them your aunt's going to be meeting you.
Okay.
I'll let you know after one conversation if it's good or bad.
Okay.
I think it's just from the experience of, you know, doing this now for 30 years, about tens of thousands of women, about, you know, a couple of thousand men already, that I just know.
You should really examine Jonathan, I think.
Also,
you know,
Jonathan,
you know,
have you found another
you know,
thing, not to discourage you, but, yeah.
Bonnie, I'm tall, I'm slim, I'm 39, and I'm single.
I know, Jonathan. It's not a good mark on your
face. And he lives in New York.
And you live in New York.
And he goes to gay bars.
But
I'm a therapist.
On top of it. But I do know that there are men who do have multiple marriages, Carrie. You know, a lot of gay men. Much more than I thought so when I first got into counseling.
Right.
That these guys just get married over and over and over again because they just don't want anybody to know they're gay.
Well, I'm very proud of my ex for not going in that direction. And, you know,
right.
I was actually, I happened to be online. I don't know if I was spying on him or what I was doing. Like, this was a year later after the relationship ended. And I saw that he had an ad on a dating site, and he wrote, you know, gay white male. And I was so proud of him for not writing straight, you know, with the 8 number like a lot of them do. Or, you know, bisexual. And I said, you know, I'm really proud of you that you wrote gay man. So,
do you have
you know,
a good friendship now, would you say?
Huh?
Do you have a friendship now?
Yeah, I mean, we're not best friends. We don't hang out. I haven't seen him in ages, but we still talk occasionally. But
how did he feel about the book coming out?
He wasn't thrilled about it. I mean, actually, you know, I keep talking about how great it was that he, you know, at least told me he was gay. And then if you think about it, he was actually punished for that because then I wrote an entire book about it. But, yeah, he wasn't thrilled. He's not thrilled about it, but he's okay with it because he knows that it's all true. So I didn't make anything up.
So, Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you, they live in the New York area and they're looking for a wonderful therapist who can really help them with this, how do they get in touch with you?
People can they can email me, jonathan@jonathanalpert.com, and they can also go to my my website, jonathanalpert.com, and find out some information about me.
And Jonathan, could you spell
that? I'm happy to see both men and women who might be dealing with this.
Could you spell that for them so they'll...
Jonathan, J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N, Alpert, A-L-P-E-R-T.
.com.
That's P as in penis, Bonnie.
Okay, that will keep people's minds fresh on the subject here.
He just had to mention a penis, you see? You see?
Well, Jonathan, we may give you more to think about than you wanted to think about by the end of the show. But also, if people, you know, didn't get Jonathan's correct spelling, you can always feel free to write to me at bonkaye@aol.com. And, Carrie, to buy your book, what's the best way to do it?
It's available everywhere, so you can just go to Barnes & Noble, or you can buy through my website, KIRIBLAKELEY.com. KerrieBlakely.com is my website. Or, you know, you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, anywhere online. It's all over the place, so.
Well, hopefully you'll have tremendous success because, you know, people need to learn and people need, you know, I know that a lot of my women were just so happy there's another book out, and especially by you because you express things so beautifully.
Oh,
and,
thanks.
You know, wish you all the luck and, you know, maybe you'll both consider coming back on, you know, in a few months from now and we'll do a catch-up and see how everything's moving.
Well, sure. We'll see if Jonathan's come out yet.
Yeah, we'll be checking on you, Jonathan.
You check on me. You both can check on me.
I plan to. This spring I'll be in New York and the three of us can have lunch together.
Well, then, and you can meet up with Carrie's boyfriends, of course.
Right. Carrie, whenever you're ready to get
serious,
call me.
I don't want her to meet any of my men. I have a feeling. I just want to bury my head in the sand.
Bonnie has the ultimate gaydar.
Yeah, I really do. It took me years to develop, but I have it down pat now. So thank both of you so much. And
thanks,
Misty,
for having us. Thank you very much.
Misty, all right, take care.
I know we kind of like crushed you into this conversation, but you've been a gracious hostess in allowing us to do that.
Thanks.
All right, so we want to thank our guests. And you guys, you can both go. Misty,
okay, thank you.
Bye.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Misty?
Yes.
Weren't they wonderful guests?
Yeah, they were wonderful guests, wonderful information, and I think they covered so many different angles. That they covered so many of the women that we work with. I, you know, when both of them talked, I could bring up so many different women that I worked with, you know, just their stories. So I know they've helped a lot of people, a lot of our listeners tonight with what they have told.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, once again, the more people who talk about this and the more people who get the information out, I think it's, you know, like I say, the best thing that can happen for people who are in our situation. And when they see that it can happen to anyone, anywhere, at any time, from any kind of background, any kind of, you know, circumstance. And, you know, regardless of how humble Carrie is, I mean, like I say, she's beautiful looking, intelligent, smart, you know, worked at Forbes magazine for 10 years. You know, she had a lot going for her. And yet it doesn't seem to matter, you know, who you are or what you have or what you don't have. You know,
it happens
to everybody, right?
It does. It happens to women from all backgrounds, all races, all colors, all religions, all socioeconomic status. It doesn't matter. It happens in every category, and it can be anyone. And it's shocking. It's shocking to all of us. You know, so many people say, oh, well, I would know if my husband was gay. You know what? Sometimes they don't know, and then they find out. They find the telltale signs. And it's just shocking. It's a crisis when they find out. It's disturbing. It's a tragedy. It's a grieving process, a huge grieving process. And it's just I was recently talking to someone I've recently met as a friend, and we were discussing some you know, our life story, and it was so funny. He said, you know, he said that I think that's an ultimate betrayal, and he had gone through a divorce process and everything. And you know what? It was really interesting because I think more people are understanding this because the word is getting out more.
Exactly.
You know, people are more educated on what's going on.
And as I mentioned in my newsletter, you know, when I first went through this 30 years ago, you know, when I saw one little magazine article, I jumped and my heart was palpitating because I felt nobody understood this or nobody knew about it. And people were snickering when you would tell them and they would think, well, he wasn't gay when you married him. How'd you make him gay?
Mm-hmm.
And,
exactly.
You know, people really had no clue. They didn't have any understanding because this was before computers and mass communication and, you know, so much attention to it. And I just feel that with all the media and the press and the computer, that things have gotten so much better and that, you know, it's easier for women now to not feel so alone that they can connect with other women.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
why I think, you know, our support chat is so important for women. you know, to connect to other women. But even if you're, you know, once again, as Misty just said, it hits everybody. It doesn't matter who you are, what you look like, where you come from. You know, I hate when I get letters from women who are saying, well, I put on 20 pounds. Yeah, okay, well, I did that when I was 10 years old. I mean, so what? You know,
exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, what's the real issue here? You know,
pounds don't make your partner gay.
And
they really feel that this is, you know, why their husbands aren't interested in them anymore, you know, because they were acting too bitchy or too that turned their husbands to men. I mean, they really in their hearts believe that they have some kind of responsibility in doing this. So,
exactly. I've had people, you know, I've been divorced now for approximately 10 years. I've had people come up and ask me not long after I filed for divorce and was going through the divorce process, what did you do to make him gay? These were people that have been friends and her family. So people, even though it's just been 10 years ago, it's scary, really, really scary. And that's part of dancing inside that circle of crazy. Then you start questioning yourself, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you jump back into it for a moment. And I would just have to really be really conscious and pull myself out and say, you know what, they didn't live with him, they didn't know him, I know the truth. And thankfully, I think things have improved tremendously by people's awareness, by books like the young lady we had on tonight, by your books, by people advertising and you know, helping people, gay, straight couples, helping them come to both of their truths, helping them, you know, to go on their way and things like that. So it's getting more attention. I think it's being understood a little better. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. We've got a long way to go, but it's improving.
And I would like to mention for those women who are going through this transition now who may have doubts that, you know, one book I have that's really good on this subject is How I Made My Husband Gay. Myths About Straight Wives. That this is a compilation of stories, of a lot of stories from our women. And I love this book because, you know, they share very openly what the red flags were that they missed, you know, how they discovered that their husbands were gay. And it's really a great guidebook for women. You know, I don't talk about that book very much, and I should talk about it more because it's written by, you know, so many of our support group members and things they should have seen. And, you know, I think it's a real help for women to feel like you're not alone, that you didn't see this sign or that sign, or even if you saw it, how you misunderstood what it really meant. And they really sit and discuss that in this book. So you can always go to my website at bonukbooks.com and order that book, How I Made My Husband Gay, Myths About Straight Wives. And that should help people also in coming to terms with this. But Carrie's book was called Can't Think Straight, A Memoir of Mixed Up Love. And, you know, it's available everywhere you go now and carries all over the place on all kinds of television shows, you know, speaking out on behalf of all straight wives and straight women in relationships. And you can see that it's going to take her a little time until she's comfortable again in her process of gay husband or gay relationship recovery that we all go through. And no pressure, like, why can't you just get over it, right, Misty?
Oh, yeah, just get over it. And I love the one, it should be easier to get over because it was with a man and not a woman. Those are really the people that don't get it. Absolutely. You get that all the time. And it's so hurtful because I will say it does take longer to get over. It does, and you don't get over. It softens as you work on yourself and as you build yourself up. You build your confidence up, your self-esteem, your sexual self-esteem, and you build your own sexuality. Even though you're straight, you have to start rebuilding your own sexuality again because your femininity is gone.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I wore skirts and dresses for like a year because I just wanted anything that made me feel like a woman and heels. You know, that was what made me feel like a woman. And, you know, it just, you have to rebuild on them bit by bit, piece by piece. And you can regain it, absolutely, but it's not an easy road. But I do think it's getting more awareness, being understood a little better, and people are talking about it more.
Well, I'm hoping that through exposure, through our support, you know, Misty and I twice a week have our support group online to make sure that women who are out there, you know, can attach to us and to other women who are going through this, so that you don't feel alone. And I think we've seen miraculous things happen through our support chat. Wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. It's so worthwhile when you're on there and, you know, someone's been coming for a year, 2 years, and you just don't see much progress, and then they finally, they make progress and they make that switch. And, I mean, it's amazing when you see that they've made that transition to say, you know what, I deserve better than this. This life is not working for me with my gay husband. We're going to have to go our separate ways. And when they finally are able to make peace with that and start owning back their power, taking back their power bit by bit, piece by piece, becoming stronger moment by moment, it's the most beautiful thing in the world. When I work with women and they switch from that really deep depressed mode and then they switch to, they gain a little bit more confidence and just a little more and a little more, and they transition towards it. It's just the most beautiful and rewarding thing as a, you know, life coach and therapist that you can ever see.
Well, I just think that, you know, the reason why we have the show is so that other women will realize that they're not alone, that there are millions of us who go through this, and that there is no, you know, quick fix. You know, all people react differently. Like Harry was saying, she became very promiscuous afterwards, and we do have women who just jump into the sexual world. And I always tell women, you know, don't do anything that's going to be destructive to yourself, which is easy to say. But after you've had your sexuality stripped down for so many years, you do want to feel as if you're normal. But you have to be able to separate that from getting overly emotionally involved with somebody in the beginning, because you haven't had a chance to restore yourself and to build up who you are again. But I always tell women they can keep practicing, you know, until they find their soulmate. Nothing wrong with that. But, you know, you have to give yourself that time to heal, to go through the grieving process. You know, Misty often talks about the different phases of the healing process, right, Misty?
Oh, yeah, there's so many different stages, you know, and the biggest thing is know that you're going to go through a grieving process. I mean, it's going to be grief. And as we've talked about before, I've worked on both sides of grief. I've worked on the side of grief where you divorce and you're grieving someone that's still alive, the loss of that relationship. And I've worked on the other side for hospice where, you know, I've worked with widows where they've actually, the person has died and left the face of this earth. So this side of it is so complicated when you are a straight woman married to a gay man. It is so complicated. But just know that, you know, you will go through that grieving process, and it's okay. And, you know, it's just whatever you need, just embrace it, go with it, and make sure you don't get stuck. When you get stuck, you're having no movement, and that's when you really, really, really have to seek, you know, professional help. There's so many professionals out there that can help. There's so many books. There's Bonnie, you know, you have your chat room. There's so many opportunities now that you can just Google and find different things that can help. So, you know, do that. You have to be proactive in healing. I always tell people, you have to be proactive. You know, you cannot force healing, but you can hinder healing by not doing what you need to do.
Well, that's a beautiful thought to leave our show with, Missy. Even if you can't force feelings, don't hinder them either, right?
Absolutely.
From Misty's words of wisdom, I love them. So, Missy, I hope you have a wonderful week.
You too.
And to all our listeners, just keep listening. The more you listen to these shows, the more you realize you are not alone, that there's lots of help available. You can write to me at bonk@aol.com or visit Misty's website. Tell them your address, Misty.
www.mistihall.com.
Okay, that's it. MistyHall.com, and you'll see Misty's beautiful website, and feel free to get in touch with her when you feel you need counseling services, because she's there for you. So, Misty, I'm going to say good night to everybody with you.
Yes, good night, and love to all.
All right, good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.